for it.
Okay. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Bitcoin 101.
Yay! Hey, a little don't die on me. It's too early.
My name is Gordon Hall. For the last 2 years, I've been working in the cryptocurrency space. Most of that time was spent leading the engineering team at BitPay. And then until very recently, I joined ChangeTip. So I'm here to answer any questions, and we'll kind of turn this thing into a Q&A after we do introductions here.
And my name is Peter Friedman. I'm here. I've done a couple of sessions on Bitcoin, and we're here to answer any questions you might have in regards to the Department of Treasury, the IRS, or any other tax agency, and Bitcoin, which means all the questions are going to go to him, right? I knew this.
So I'm curious, how many people in this room have Bitcoins or have bought or sold Bitcoins? Okay, wow, so this is interesting. So how many people are here because they have little to no idea what a Bitcoin is or how it works?
Can you talk more in the mic, bring it closer?
Sure, yeah, sorry. How about, is that good? Can you hear me in the back?
Better?
Louder.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, so we'll kind of do a crash course, Bitcoin 101 real quick. And we'll go from there. So what is Bitcoin? So Bitcoin is two things. It's a payment network. It's a decentralized payment network. And it's also the unit of the currency that is transferred on that payment network. So what is a decentralized payment network? What does that mean? It means that it's not governed by any central authority. So when you think about the way that fiat or traditional money is created, it's printed and issued by a central party. The bitcoins that are created on the Bitcoin network are not issued by a single party. So it replaces the government with basically math, and we can get into a little more detail with that. So, Peter, do you have anything that you want to go ahead?
Right. The only disclaimer, you know, some people may think that Bitcoin is a virtual currency that you don't have to pay income tax on and have these great amount of transactions. And kind of like the Linden dollars, where the woman in Germany became a multimillionaire because she sold virtual real estate with Linden dollars. You got Bitcoin is a virtual currency. If you buy and sell, there is a tax effect. So we're not governing. We're giving you a disclaimer that it's taxable. We're not advocating don't pay your taxes, don't report transactions.
Peter's advocating that.
I'm advocating that. It's recorded.
Oh, you're right. I'm already on the list.
You're already on the list. So, okay. So, pretty much. All right. I did my disclaimer. You can go ahead.
Okay. So, I think this kind of probably work a lot better to get an idea, because you guys all probably have varying understandings of what Bitcoin is. So, why don't we just go ahead and start with some questions? What is it? How do I?
Anyone have a question?
Right there. Thank you very much.
And it's since it is being recorded, I apologize. Could you wait for the cube?
Yes, I can wait for the cube.
And I appreciate it.
Speaker. Okay. So it's just a basic question. Let's say I want to get a Bitcoin. How do I get a Bitcoin?
That's a great question. So the answer to that question is one part of that answer to that question is how do you get regular money? So you work or you get a paycheck or you sell goods and services. Those are all ways to get Bitcoin. There are places online that you can find where you can trade goods and services for Bitcoin, but most typically people will buy from an exchange, which acts very much like a stock market, if you think about that, where people are buying and selling Bitcoins on one of these exchanges. One of these exchanges, and Peter will be happy to troll about this one a little bit, had some big issues in Bitcoin's early history, which you're probably familiar with, which was Mt. Gox. I think we've seen the last of those days for now. But there are a number of websites. I'll be happy to write down a list, or I should have brought some slides. But you can buy on Coinbase is probably the most well known, or Bitstamp. Those are the most well known U.S. exchanges. But it's very simple. You would go on, you would add a link a bank account or a credit card or a debit card, and you just say I want to buy $200 worth of Bitcoin. And I think right now that would be just shy of one full Bitcoin.
It's 229.
229.
I looked it up before we came. Wait, 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 you need the box.
Go the other way.
Can you sell?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
I'm somebody that's really new to Bitcoin. I just started like a couple of weeks ago, and so I'd like to reference that question too. The first thing you need to buy and sell, trade, is you need a wallet.
That is correct,
and
yes.
So you can get a wallet online through a website, or you can download an app on your phone.
Yeah, so that's a great question. So there's a number of different ways to store Bitcoins. With that question, let me just back up a little bit and talk about what it means to store a Bitcoin, because I think that part of the difficulty I had early on in understanding Bitcoin was I kept having this mental notion of some data that represented a Bitcoin, like I can open up a Bitcoin file and here's my Bitcoin. But it's important to understand that there are no Bitcoins. There are no digital representation of the Bitcoins themselves. Bitcoin is a distributed ledger, right? So it's inputs and outputs. It's just transactions. So there's no you can unlock or basically claim the funds that were a part of a given transaction with a key that you get when you create your wallet. Or a paper wallet, right there. Very good. So there's a number of ways to store the key that lets you unlock this value on this network. Coinbase and blockchain.info are both online wallets. So you can have, like, much like your bank account, you can go online and you can, you know, add an email address and probably some KYC information for tax purposes. Or for what they have to collect for regulatory reasons. And your Bitcoins are stored on a server that is controlled by that website. And then if you want to withdraw them or send them somewhere else, you can do that. That other place that you might send them would be a wallet that you might run on your computer. So a wallet is a piece of software that stores your key that allows you to unlock the Bitcoins, and also, depending on the type of wallet, can either contribute to the network by storing the record of the transaction history. So the Bitcoin network verifies that you have the money that you have. So the entire network all reaches what's called consensus and agrees that, what's your name?
Ed.
That Ed has 5 Bitcoins. And if less than 51% of the network says Ed doesn't have 5 Bitcoins, then Ed doesn't have 5 Bitcoins. So this is we can get into that a little more later if you guys like to talk about the consensus mechanism. But let's keep with the basic questions for now.
So really basic question: if I'm paying taxes on Bitcoin, hi.
Oh, sorry. Good.
Yeah, it's like
where are you?
It's a virtual voice.
If I'm paying taxes on Bitcoin, what I liked about Morfed was it was more of a barter kind of system, but you know, that didn't quite work out for us all. So if I'm paying taxes on Bitcoin, what's the advantage? You know, just real basic.
Real basic from my perspective as a tax person is that basically it's a decentralized ledger. You do not have to run it through a bank. If you basically are doing a transaction and you're doing it overseas to, let's say, a country that takes 72 to 2 weeks to process payment because you have to send it through the banking system. And in Bitcoin, you can do it how quick?
It depends on how many confirmations you want. So that's another thing, right? So once you send a payment over the Bitcoin network, there are other people who are participating in the network will say, hey, this is a good transaction. And the longer you wait, the more people have confirmed that, and you know, the higher that number, the more likely that, you know, it's not going to be double spent or revoked. So
right. Yeah. But you're gonna do it. You're gonna get that transaction done well before going through a centralized banking system. Right. So from my perspective, from a business perspective, doing business overseas, virtual currency beats regular currency, hands down. And by the way, bartering also is taxable, but we won't discuss that. This is a Bitcoin.
I'd just like to add one thing to that, which is the fees for the transfer. Obviously, okay, so we haven't touched on that. With Bitcoin, there are no fees with a little asterisk, right? Yeah, they're very small, fractions of a penny fee. You can choose to pay a higher fee to have your transaction validated more quickly. So if you want a, you know, instant transaction at a cash register, maybe you'll pay a higher fee, but there's still fractions of a penny here. In addition, it's really interesting to when you hear that question in the United States, because it's kind of like one of those first world problems. But if you ask people in Argentina specifically, we have at BitPay, we had a team out in Argentina, they don't ask that question. When you talk about economies that have had their currency abused by their government to the point where it's virtually worthless, Bitcoin starts to become extremely interesting to those people, and they don't ask why is Bitcoin important. They just know.
Right. And you know, Bitcoin does not get frozen, whereas you could do a transaction in, let's call, I'll call it centralized currency for this conversation. You could basically have a devaluation immediately while you're doing it, or you could have a currency that's immediately frozen. So all of a sudden, you're buying a product, trying to sell a product, and you're out your cash. You're not out your Bitcoin.
One thing on that though is Bitcoin transactions are not reversible.
That is correct, but they go one way. Unless there's the transaction itself is not reversible, but that is not to say that if you're working with a merchant, that they won't refund you money if you have a dispute. But technology-wise, there is no reversal for a single transaction. Thank you.
So where does Bitcoin derive its inherent value from? For instance, the dollar derives it from the power of the U.S. government and the health of our...
Actually, the dollar doesn't. You know, it's the dollar basically derives its value based on a market value, all right? Mm-hmm. Just, and Bitcoin does the same thing. I mean, there is currency traders, and they set values based on the currency exchange rate, all right? That's how centralized systems do it. That's why when you saw Greece going into a major burnout, I mean, why was the euro all of a sudden at 1.6 dropping to 1.1? Where basically $1 would buy 1.1 euros, where when you, before the fiasco, you could have bought 1 point, you know. It's a market-based system of value. What is the value of a Bitcoin? What somebody's willing to pay
for.
Yeah,
exactly. That's the perfect answer. It's determined by the markets.
So I think that's a great segue to my question, which is, can you talk a little bit about current fluctuation and Bitcoin and like what you've seen in the last year? Because I'm new to it, but I've heard that there can be a lot of volatility in that.
Sure, that's an important question to talk about. So, and it's something that I'm sure that anybody who's heard anything about Bitcoin is thinking about. When I first joined, or when I was first in discussions with BitPay to join, I was very skeptical. I did not know anything about Bitcoin. I just knew that this job was we needed a software engineer, and it was something new, and it was cool. And so I actually ended up rescinding the offer that I accepted initially because I felt like it was a scam. And then I ended up coming back 6 months later because I had seen that, you know, the value. And then I think it was November 2013. The price peaked at about $1,300.
Yeah, $1,300.
And then it came swooping back down to $649-ish, and right now it's at about, what do you say, $229. And it's actually held pretty steady between $250 to $300 over the past couple months from what I've seen. So it seems to be stabilizing. What's important is it's important to not get hung up on the height of the value, but rather the stability of the value. And I think we're starting to see that stabilize a little more.
I mean, worst story I could tell you about valuation of Bit. Oh, it's terrible. I did a lecture here. It was at 90. It was at $90. And then less than a year later, it was at 1300. Now it's at 220.
How many Bitcoins did you have when it was at 90?
Not enough. You know, obviously I'm here. Yeah. Not enough. Who has the box?
I watched a documentary recently and said that at the rate that Bitcoins are being mined, that there won't be any more to be mined for too long. Is that true? And if it is, what's the maximum amount of Bitcoins that will be available in the world?
So that's a good question. So the maximum number of Bitcoins, as the protocol defines, will be 21 million Bitcoins. And so that happens over a length of time, and the network automatically adjusts what's called the difficulty of basically how hard it is or how much work has to be put into basically to mint some Bitcoins. What was the documentary? Was it The Rise and Rise of Bitcoin? I'm actually embarrassed to say that I have not watched it yet.
I have. Yeah, is it good?
It's not bad.
Okay. Before too long is sort of a kind of an ambiguous statement for me. I'm not sure without having watched the documentary. Are you asking once that happens, how do miners make money or how does the transaction work? Are you asking, am I worried about?
Will it affect the currency rate?
That's a good question. We hope not.
Oh, she doesn't ever. Okay, the question was based on that there is a finite amount of bitcoins, will that affect its market value, its rate? And the response is really, we hope not. It really is. One of the issues about mining, there is no question that when it was at 1300, Bitcoin was very profitable mining. Now, at about 229, because remember, you're going to pay for the electricity, you have a computer set up. I mean, some of the massive miners that I know about, some of them have disconnected because it wasn't profitable. They basically, it's economics. I'm going to get this. It's costing me that. I'm making a big $20. You know, maybe I should waste my time doing something else.
Yeah, mining has really kind of become a big player's game, if you will. And just to kind of clarify that we use the term mining. So mining is the process by which bitcoins are generated and transactions are verified on the Bitcoin network. It uses an algorithm or a type of algorithm that we call proof of work, which means the computer has to prove that it solved some very difficult math problem in order to prove that it has performed some work. And so that's basically how this works.
Somebody has.
So that actually leads into my question. Okay. I read, as I understand it, everybody agreed on the same algorithm for this to work. And apparently, there's been some discussion that something is running a shortness or computational strength such that after a while we're not going to be able to even close any transactions. The computers aren't powerful enough to take care of that. And change the algorithm universally, so you would end up with two factions and nobody would believe anything. Can you speak to that? Remind me what else is in that article I read?
You better summarize his question because he was going in.
Yes.
And out.
So, if I understand the question correctly, and I was actually hoping that this question wouldn't come so early, but this is the block size debate. Boom, boom, boom. What I would encourage you to do is to shift focus from the block size debate specifically and start looking up other ways we can scale Bitcoin. So I think the community has done a really, really shitty job with making everybody focus on this very specific solution to the problem. Well, we need to raise the block size, which means we need to raise the size of the container of transactions per block. So when 10 transactions happen on the network, they all get put into a block and the miners perform all kinds of crazy moon math and then they get written into history. So basically the question is, as adoption grows and there are more transactions, will the network be able to keep up with only doing a certain amount of transactions confirmed at a time? And I'm not sure, I don't have an opinion on this. I did like Gavin's talking about Moore's law and how, you know, it ultimately won't matter because people will have bigger hard drives and they'll be cheaper and so on and so on. But I think that there are other things. I would encourage you to look up the Lightning Network protocol, which is another proposal for Bitcoin scalability. But it is a problem. It is something that we are actively trying to solve, the Bitcoin scalability problem. And do I think that the block size is the solution? I'm not sure.
The only thing I'm going to bring up in regards to the block size is that I look at it kind of like 1999 with computers, where everybody went into a total fear. Oh my God, we're going to hit the year 2000. All the computers are going to crash. Nuclear missiles are going off because the Department of Defense, they have these old computers. And we're still here. Computers still work. I think that the issue is that it's recognized as an issue. And if it's recognized as an issue, the community itself will find a solution. No, you don't have the box. He has the box.
Okay.
As I understand it, Bitcoin being finite was created as a way to sort of tie it to about, like the dollar, for instance, used to be tied to gold.
Right.
With, as was pointed out earlier, Bitcoin possibly running into its limit, do you believe there's a chance that gold price versus the dollar and Bitcoin price versus the dollar may merge?
I'm not sure. Can you throw the box back over there?
Give him the box back.
Don't be so feisty. Can you rephrase the question, perhaps?
You got two of us stumped.
It seemed to me that the purpose of making Bitcoin finite was to have a backing for a currency, which, again, the dollar used to have when it was backed by gold.
Right.
Once it reaches that finite limit, mm-hmm. which obviously gold we know does have a finite limit, do you believe that in the future that the price of gold and the price of Bitcoin will essentially become the same at some point?
Okay. I'm not sure how you would tie the price of Bitcoin to gold. I don't know how that would connect, but you're very, I mean, it's absolutely true that it was very deliberate that it was a cap, right? Because if economics are fundamentally based on scarcity, and you have an infinite supply of money, then that money is worth nothing, right? So it was deliberate to create this way of funneling the amount of these bitcoins into the market at a specific rate, and then ultimately cutting it off. So in that sense, in the sense that it's bound by the same sort of economic rules that of anything that's scarce, I think that you could draw a parallel to gold.
I have trouble doing that, but you know, you didn't want my disclaimer so hot, did you? I mean, gold is not finite. There are still gold reserves being found. They're mining gold out of the ocean now. So, I mean, I still relate to the economic aspect of, if I'm going to make a dollar in mining, I'm going to find a way to do it. Right now, it is profitable to mine gold out of the ocean bed. Okay, so they're doing it. If gold drops to a certain price, they're going to stop doing it. So I understand what you're saying, but your premise sounded like gold is finite. Gold is not finite. We haven't discovered all the reserves of gold anyway. I mean, there are gold mines that have been closed down because they're not economical, that have started to be reopened again because now they are economical. So I don't think I could ever see Bitcoin be tied into a gold value.
Okay, well that was based on my understanding that gold was finite, and you just blew my mind.
So. Sorry. It's the age thing.
Sorry.
So is there a mechanism if you buy Bitcoins in order to get your money back out of Bitcoins into U.S. dollars? And if so, how is that tracked by the banking system or the government?
That's a good question. It depends on if you want it to be.
He didn't say that.
So okay, so I'll answer the question. So if your funds are stored, if your bitcoins are stored on a hosted wallet, say like Coinbase, and you want to withdraw them to your bank account into USD, Coinbase obviously they're required by law and by various regulations to report that transaction in some way. So if you're using a service, if you're trusting a third party to manage that for you, then the reporting is done. If you and I after the session here, if you sell me some Bitcoin, then it's up to you to report that.
Not really. It's actually up to him also. It's a two-way transaction, but
it's up to us to report.
There, I like that phrase much better. It's up to
okay, what I have is a simple question. It's the problem is that what money is really trying to track is the total aggregate wealth we have in the system, and ideally and generally consistently, it's always increasing. Now, the problem there, of course, is if Bitcoin is fixed and not expanding at all, then you're tracking the exact same amount of wealth with a fixed counter.
Right. I understand where you're going. Mm-hmm. I don't mean to cut you off.
No, that's fine.
But the number is fixed. the wealth is not fixed, because the wealth is associated with the economic value that is assigned to the coin. I could have 21 million coins. That does not mean that it's worth $21 million. It's worth whatever the market says. So therefore, the only difference, the only thing is, if all of a sudden I have 21 million right now valued at $229 per coin, if, let us say, that value, because the market goes up to $500 per coin, wealth has increased. All right? It's not the fixation of the number 21 million, it's the market value of the currency. Just like you take a look at a ridiculous thing, you take a look at the markets in China last month. The markets in China theoretically talked about Chinese wealth of a public sector. They lost one third of their value in a month because of the devaluation, because the Chinese market became illiquid. China's, they, we're not getting into banking law. We're Bitcoin. Jesus.
Also, just to add to that, so Bitcoin, they're divisible down to 8 decimal places. So there's a lot of room for tying the price to much smaller amounts. So you can have a fraction of a Bitcoin.
Oh, and so I want to bring up one statement. When I was introduced to Bitcoin, it was at a BitCon convention. So if I accidentally, which probably has happened already, mention BitCon, it's because where I was introduced to, it just stuck in my mind. It was a great convention, what can I tell you? So I apologize to the purists that say, he's on the panel, why can't he pronounce it correctly? You should have been at my convention. You'd be calling it the same thing, too.
Ask Benedict Cumberbatch to pronounce penguin.
Well, I was just wondering, like, it's not, I know Bitcoin's not backed by a governmental body, but I was just wondering, is it susceptible to inflation the way that a non-virtual currency would be? So, like, would a transaction with a Bitcoin be the same 5 years from now because it's not backed by a governmental body?
If the market value is the same, yes, but the market value fluctuates.
Yeah, so when we talk about inflation, I think I associate that with some sort of external party being the cause of such. And so if that being the basis for the change in market value, I would say that Bitcoin is inflation proof, but that doesn't mean that the value can't shift all over the place since it is directly tied to the market.
Hi, I just recently started encrypting my wallets with BIP38. Do you Woo-hoo. Think this is necessary for everyone?
I think encrypt all the things, man. That's what I think. All of them.
If you can encrypt it, do it.
Had somebody through here.
Notice nobody's talking.
Okay.
Yes.
Since I believe I understood that Bitcoin has been very volatile versus the U.S. dollar, ranging from, I believe, $90 per Bitcoin to $1,300 and then back to $220, I would ask if there's a mechanism to hedge with Bitcoin such as you would have with other currencies?
Well, first of all, I recognize we're in the United States, all right, and therefore we talk about dollars. The dollar has not been stable. The dollar has been all over the map. If you take a look at it from from another foreign currency, and that's what Bitcoin really is. You know, Bitcoin is a virtual currency. It has market value. It goes up and down. U.S. dollar in Argentina goes up and down. Mexico, it goes really up and down. Because the dollar is not as stable. The issue is because we're in the United States, we always talk about dollars. But if you take a look and say, you know, that champagne that I bought from France 5 years ago, I could buy it for $30 US, and now it's $70 US, that's because of the currency fluctuation of the dollar, not the product, because that champagne probably cost the same in France 5 years ago it is today. So it's the market value that basically keeps it in place. And when you talk about the 1300, we're getting into the area of there is a belief in some areas that there was manipulation of the price. And He's like, I gotta talk.
Well, okay, well, to answer your question, the original question, very quickly, yes, there are services that will allow you to hedge. I think that one that's relatively new is called Bit Reserve. If you, I can write it down for you later on if you'd like that. And you can put it against pounds, euros, dollars. You can put it against anything you'd like. So
my question is, I was excited to buy my first Bitcoin, and I thought, what can I actually do with this thing? Can you give the room just a couple suggestions for something that a normal person might use these for?
Sure. You're gonna be spending your Bitcoins a lot online. There are brick and mortar stores that accept it. They are few and far between right now, and this is part of the adoption problem. But there's a really great service. I feel like I'm just pitching, you know, I'm like advertising all these Bitcoin companies. But they're called Gift. It's spelled with a Y, and you can spend your Bitcoins on virtual gift cards. So for Starbucks or for Amazon or what, they have all kinds of gift cards on there, and then you can go use that in the store or you can use it online. But there's a lot of services. Mostly IT services will accept Bitcoin. I pay for my VPN with Bitcoin. I buy shirts with Bitcoin. There's a site called $6 Shirts. There's all kinds of stuff online. You just gotta find it.
You could buy a Tesla with Bitcoin.
You can. That is true. Yeah. If you got that many Bitcoins.
Well, yeah. A little bit picky on that part.
With the taxation of it, say you were receiving Bitcoins, what would you then pay the government taxes if you had on the Bitcoins?
I'm receiving Bitcoins for what?
From, like, say you traded them for money or traded them for a service or something.
Okay, if you were buying a service, right?
So you're
that's not it's treated like a foreign currency. In other words, when you bought your Bitcoin, you bought it at a certain value. When you used your Bitcoin, or using the terrible term, sold it to get a product, okay, there's a value difference. And that could either be a profit or a loss. If you bought it for $1,300 and you sold it and you bought something for $200, you have a $1,000 loss on Bitcoin because it's almost like stock. Your cost basis in Bitcoin, that Bitcoin, was $1,300. When you finally utilized it, it was for $200. Depending on what you utilized it for, that could be a $1,000 loss. It's not always a profit.
Yeah, no, but what I'm talking about is if you're receiving Bitcoin as income, and so you're paying taxes on it.
Right.
What would you give the government?
So that's a good question. I think I can field that one. So at BitPay, a lot of us accepted a portion, or there were even some that took all of their salary in Bitcoin. And so it was the Bitcoin we received was net our deductions. So it was just like your regular paycheck. The Bitcoin we would receive, it was basically the taxes were paid by the employer, or they were deducted by the employer, rather. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah, but you had your taxes withheld.
That's correct,
right.
Yeah.
If you basically are a proprietor, typical person, your profit, depending, first on the federal government, you have, I would say, 30%, and the 30% includes Social Security tax, which, if you're an employee, you get paid. The employer pays another half. U.S. government, by the way, does not accept Bitcoins as payment. It depends on the state.
You can try.
They're not going to do it. It depends on the state what the state income tax is. State income taxes are all. If you're from Florida, you have no state income tax. If you're from New York City, you have 13%. So, I mean, I would say figure out your profit and then probably put about 30-40%. All right. There is something you should know if you basically keep your bitcoins overseas and it's in excess of a value of $10,000. There's something called a foreign bank accounting report, and it has been determined that bitcoins qualify. So if you keep your money overseas and it's over $10,000, you're required to report it to the IRS, not pay taxes on it. If you don't report it and they find out about it, it's 50% penalty. So.
But you have to pay in cash.
Which you have to pay in some currency that the US government recognizes, including credit cards.
Which incidentally is the only reason the USD has value is because you have to pay your taxes with it.
Of course.
Yeah, I was under the speaker.
Because it's still stored on a server somewhere, right?
There is a server there somewhere. And it is where the server farm is.
Well, that's interesting, though, too, because if there aren't any real, I mean, there's no physical bitcoins. I mean, you could have, if I back up my private key to a server, I'm sorry, yeah, just let me, if I back up my private key to a server that's in Norway, is that seen as where my bitcoins are being stored? Because I could have my private key backed up in Norway, I could have it in Sweden, I could have it in my house as well. What constitutes the location of the bitcoins?
If you're using a third party.
Ah, okay.
Okay. If you're using a third party, where is that third party located?
Gotcha.
Because they have a physical presence, physical establishment.
Okay.
You know where it is because when you sign up, it tells you, when you sign up with a third party, it states where its address is.
Okay, sorry.
Oh, being that it's finite, the amount of bitcoins, when it gets to that number, then mining becomes less profitable. Who is going to make all the calculations for the transactions to confirm all the payments for bitcoins? What is going to happen then?
That is a very good question, and we are actively discussing it in the community. You should join the Bitcoin mailing list. It's not something that I'm too terribly familiar with, or at least I haven't heard anything compelling to that argument. But I think that we've got the date out at. I'm not going to say it because I will misquote it. But we have many, many moons until that time comes.
Yeah.
2140.
Thank you.
Yeah. I don't think I'll be around.
None of us will be around, so it doesn't matter.
He'll be around. Me.
2140.
Yeah,
it's. Yeah, I'm not going to live to be that old.
I trust you. You're young.
So there's these things called quantum computers that will be coming out in the next few decades, and with them, conceivably, some evil people could break the encryption that Bitcoin uses, so they could like hijack transactions, intercept them, and like make their own fake Bitcoins. And that they can then pass off as like real ones, which would lower the value because like anyone could then conceivably make their own bitcoins. Do you plan on dealing with the?
So let me say something about quantum computing right now. It scares the shit out of me, and we're all screwed. There is quantum safe encryption. It will break many things, and so that's something that we're gonna have to solve those problems sooner rather than later. But the good thing is that we have people who are aware of those problems, and the first step is identifying it.
Yeah. And protect our missile silos.
Okay. So this is way off in the future, hopefully. But is there a way to transfer money instead of having a will to family members using this, where you can avoid some of the tackiness of wills?
Absolutely. So, Ed, can you hold up your paper wallet? So what Ed has in his hand is basically a private key, which, what, like I said earlier, is how you unlock your bitcoins, okay? and it's encoded into that QR code. So what? It's encrypted, hopefully. Don't take a picture of it.
Don't take a picture.
I'm going to blow it.
No! Give him a break. He just started and you're ready.
So this is basically, this is the equivalent of cash under the mattress. So you might want to, you could use something like this and put it in a safe and then designate in your will that, you know, whatever's in the safe belongs to so-and-so. Or there's even technology that called multi-signature wallets, which allow you to basically have funds that are can only be spent if by certain people or by people who possess various keys. So say you have three kids and you want to say, this money can only be spent if all three of my kids sign this transaction or basically confirm that it's okay to spend. Those are all ways that you can pass on money in that manner. So,
are we talking about probate? Okay, because you know, talking about $10 million, estate exemption, put it into an irrevocable trust, and you don't have to play this. Because the big problem is going to be this: if it's enough money, and the person gets it, and it becomes identified by the government, and that person gets audited, and they basically sit there and say, how did you establish this living? How did you basically put your down payment? And they come back and say, well, mom left me this Bitcoin number. You're gonna have criminal investigative division down there real fast. And these are cute guys. I mean, the criminal investigative division are lovely human beings. They have one minor problem. You have accountants carrying guns. This is not
It's not a minor
thing.
Problem. Yeah.
It's not a good thing. So you got to be careful because, you know, they do cost of living audits. You know, I mean, that's how they catch drug people.
Well, maybe to clarify a little bit with your question, what part of the transaction of passing on money to your love to your family loved ones or whoever it is, what part of that transaction are you trying to make easier? Is it the just the whole thing?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, we all know about this. I'm just asking the question. It's either bad or Caribbean.
Cayman.
There,
right.
Yes.
That one's a lie, by the way. That's a myth.
It doesn't exist.
No, it exists. But they report everything.
Can bitcoins be our Grand Cayman Island myth?
I'm not sure. You can store them anywhere, I suppose.
You can store them anywhere. I mean, you can store them anywhere. The issue you have is spending disclosing unknown wealth. Can trigger something.
You get the box back there, yes.
Speaking to transactions, not employee payments, so I'm a contractor. I know how to bill for my goods and services to my customers in cash money, and I can tell them a rate, and they can wrap their head around that. If I'm trying to introduce my customers to Bitcoin, and I could even do it silver, I think, more easily.
Could you bring the mic up a little to you? No, we can't hear you.
I think I could do it silver easier than I could do it with Bitcoin as far as explaining it to my customers. I mean, how in the world, if I've got a good service that I'm trading with somebody on a long-term basis, are they going to have to look at a chart every day to figure out how, are we going to have to collectively look at a chart every day to calculate what we're going to agree on, redo our contract every day?
No, you're not Mexico. Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Which, by the way, every contract in Mexico, and that's why I joke about it, is in dollars. They no longer use their own currency to write contracts. It's in dollars. The issue is, if you are writing a contract, you put a value on your service as a contractor. At that moment, it is determined what the value is. If somebody walked in and we're not having a discussion about paying taxes or not. If somebody walked in because you're giving them a cash discount and they lay the cash on you, you know exactly what you have. If they, at that moment, when you get transferred the Bitcoins, you have exactly what you know you were entitled to get. Silver is actually worse. Because you get, first of all, you're going to have to carry the goddamn thing. This is not exactly a lightweight bullion you're sitting there with. And then where are you going to sell it?
So, in your question, I think you were mainly trying to figure out how do you calculate the exchange rate if it's constantly changing? How do you bill your customers for that appropriately? Like, you have to agree on a specific rate each time you come up with a contract?
My customers, I've got people I've worked with for 3 years. I've got a rate that I build them. And so, at that, the cash is really simple. And to the question, I think the silver, and that's just because I'm used to talking in the terms of silver. For me, I think I can explain it. But this Bitcoin mess, you guys are talking 200 to 1300 to 300. And I know what you say, but God,
But when you... Let's see.
So one
I
thing.
Have no connection.
So here I'm gonna promote another company again.
Go for it.
So I, as a merchant, or somebody selling goods or services like yourself, BitPay is a really really great service to use. And it would allow you to set up a recurring billing with your customer at a USD rate. You'd say I want $50 a month for 10 months. And BitPay will, at the time of invoice creation or the bill creation, will calculate the exchange rate for you, and you will receive either that full amount in Bitcoins, the full amount in US dollars, or fractions of the two based on what you want to do at any given moment. So the idea is you would likely abstract that problem away from yourself and rely on a service to handle some of the complexity there. Who's got the box?
So, here. So, my understanding of Bitcoin mining is not strong, but as I understand it, you have a bunch of competing computer farms, server farms, nodes working to encrypt, validate transactions, and for some Bitcoin, yay, they win. So that's a pretty monumental amount of computing power that's going on, competing if you're not part of the node or whatever was that encrypted that block, then you're out. So would you comment on the amount of energy that is in fact wasted simply to meet the arbitrary requirement of transacting Bitcoin?
Sure. I think that it's, well, this might be solved by quantum computing if it doesn't destroy the world. The waste is problematic, and I say that as someone who I would say I'm very environmentally conscious, but as far as the amount of computing power and the fact that the difficulty continuously increases is something that we need to consider, and it is a problem that we need to solve, and I don't know or have a solution to that yet, but it is important to have that in mind, for sure. Thanks for bringing that up. You got the box.
Yes, I did hear earlier that you could do some transactions to foreign countries or certain foreign countries with greater speed because of Bitcoin. However, I'm also hearing learning curve issues, indeterminate, perhaps unknowable risk issues, and I'm really having some trouble figuring out why I might really want to use this. Can you give me some good reasons?
Why to use Bitcoin? Do you want to give a few first?
Besides the computer-esque novelty of it all.
Yeah, sure.
No, you can go first. This should be interesting.
Okay. So we touched on this a little bit earlier, and that is the lack of transaction fees, or the lack of transaction fees that are more than a fraction of a penny. Mm-hmm. So in a ideal world, if a merchant or a business can save on transaction fees, then they would hopefully pass those savings on to you. So there is that. All the benefits we described earlier, where it's susceptible to inflation from a third party, the transactions are instant. They may not be confirmed instantly, but the money, the transaction is broadcast instantly. So depending upon the merchant, how many confirmations they want, you it might be, I don't know if it's much quicker than a debit card. It's hard to argue against that point. Other benefits.
Of using virtual currency versus a centralized currency?
Yes.
Inflation.
Well, inflation. I would say one of the biggest ones is that the virtual currency is set at a market rate by people that use it, whereas a centralized currency is artificially set by a central government.
There's another really, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, and no, he's huffing on.
It's a market thing. You can,
let me put it to you simply, okay? I've been dealing a lot in the country called Malaysia.
Okay.
They have their currency is based on petrol, oil and gas. Okay. When oil was sold at $100, the exchange rate was 2 to 1. $1 US, $2 their currency. Oil and gas fell apart. In the US, that currency is now traded at 4.4 to 1. In Malaysia, the government has stated if you do it, you're basically a criminal and we will put you to jail. And in the Constitution, it is at 3.8 to 1. 3.8 to 1. So the government has artificially created an exchange rate. China has done the same thing. The UK has done it a couple of times. Countries set an exchange rate to basically preserve their inherent economy. That's what they're required to do.
Well, governments don't act out of the interest of people.
Okay.
I'm being facetious.
You see, this is the difference.
How many anarchists do we have in the room here? I'm really curious. Yes, all right, this is right.
This one's not an anarchist, though. You know, I'm sorry. Where were you when I was marching when I was 16?
That was you throwing those in the Starbucks windows?
How many libertarians are there in the room?
Hell yeah!
Woo! I come.
Libertarians or left libertarians? There's a difference.
Liberals and libertarians are like night and day. Oh, God. Okay.
We don't have to get into political theory.
A libertarian.
Libertarian believes that governments are essential, even though they are evil. There are things that not absolutely must be done by government, but are still probably better done by government. Not a lot of things, and our current society anywhere in the world is vastly overgoverned, but it's still there are some things that governments should do.
So I think that's actually good.
I believe governments are generally pretty much always evil and you should avoid them.
Or destroy them.
So that's kind of more the libertarian party. So actually the term, and we don't have to get too far deep into anarchism
are we
right
in
now.
Bitcoin.
But the term libertarian itself was actually created when the word anarchist was outlawed in France. So they are synonymous with one another. So libertarian party is I'll say that you guys stole the word from us. But that's what's more of a.
I'm classifying myself as a member of libertarian
party. Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah.
I think governments are.
Can we go back to okay, who has the box? Right, who has the box?
Got the box? Yeah,
all right, let's go.
Sorry.
So you talked about how it's a solution from people in countries with bad currencies, but why can't they just do what Mexico did and use the dollar? Because the dollar is a lot more stable than Bitcoin.
Do you know politically what it's like as a country to sit there and say, our currency is so bad and fluctuate so well that I'm going to use another country's currency? The first politician that says that is usually the first politician that either, depending on the country, will get killed or definitely will not get elected again. It's the same problem with euros and the marks, the German marks. You talk to German people and they reminisce about the marks. You know, the Deutsche Mark. And they still, every year, always talk about coming up with a referendum of, we're going to bring it back. It's national pride.
So we got the box right over here.
I've heard a lot of people talking about, like, ways of hiding money and trying to do things under the table. But you also mentioned that Bitcoin has a public ledger. Can you explain how that might prove difficult to do nefarious things with your bitcoins?
Yeah.
Ooh.
I can.
We are not promoting nefarious things. I'm a CPA. I got too many state licenses here. So, I don't own enough bitcoins yet. You know what I'm saying?
So it's important to understand that Bitcoin is not anonymous, like many, like you may have been told or may have the impression. It is not anonymous. It is pseudonymous. Is that right?
Pseudo.
P-S-E-U-D-O. So the ledger being public is crucial to the functioning of the system because it has to be audited by the entire network. And so you have, obviously, your personal information is not on this network. You're basically given a pseudonym, which is a random string of characters. And we could talk about the cryptography a little bit later if you guys would like that. But for all intents and purposes, it's just garbage that you see. And so, but that garbage can be traced, and it can be followed back, because if you reuse the same addresses, you know, we talked a little bit about, if you were in any of the panels yesterday, we talked about metadata, and then was it the PGP and surveillance technology panel, we were talking about how you can pick up just the information of where it's coming from and where it's going to is enough to draw some conclusions from. So there, you do have to take some steps to ensure privacy if it really matters. So there are services. If you're on the dark, deep web, that will launder your bitcoins. But I would. This is public knowledge. I'm just saying that it exists. But there is another.
Which he does not know the website too.
I could recite it. But if you've ever tried to recite an onion address, it's not.
Right.
It's not. So one thing that I would recommend is if you use blockchain.info, they have the web wallet. They have something called CoinJoin, which is basically the less nefarious version of this, which will actually basically mix your transaction with in a pool of other transactions and then issue that, essentially. And so that's one way to ensure privacy in a legal way. Less nefarious.
Just to say that.
What is the law anyway?
What is the law? What is jail? Oh, wait. That's what, you know, personally, I do not look good in orange. But orange is not the new black. But understand there have been nefarious websites utilizing Bitcoin to sell extremely questionable services and products. Which went under, they'll never find us. Now, those owners happen to be all in jail now because they did get cracked.
Which, speaking of which, how many people in this room believe that Ross Ulbricht's conviction was warranted? We got one.
How many people know who Ross Ulbricht is?
Wait, now tell them. Okay, so
Ross Ulbricht, also known as Dread Pirate Roberts, was the... Okay, you guys know who he is now? Okay.
He was the
man who was allegedly behind the Silk Road, which was an online underground market.
Convicted.
Convicted.
Alleged.
He was convicted, that is true. He is in jail. But he was allegedly, he's convicted. He was convicted for running the Silk Road, which is an online underground marketplace that used Bitcoin to allow people to trade all sorts of things. But specifically,
drugs.
There were drugs.
Weapons. Murder for hire.
Unsubstantiated murder for hire.
Prostitution, no. Distance. Too much of a distance.
There was some pedophilia, though, wasn't there?
It's the dark web, man. It's anything is possible.
We should have a I think we should do a one on the dark web.
We should.
We really should.
Are we running?
Dark web.
What's our time?
I don't know. We haven't gotten our 10-minute warning yet.
How many?
Okay, so
my 10-minute warning.
Yeah. Well, but before we start wrapping it up, we'll take a few more questions. But I would like to say, we'll take your question for sure. I'm sorry, you've been very patient.
No problem.
But anybody in this room who doesn't have Bitcoin, or does, who would like some Bitcoin, we will.
Raise your hand if you want Bitcoin.
All right, now, how many of you pull your hands down if you don't have a Twitter account? Okay, so
go open one now.
So if you don't have a Twitter account and you want Bitcoin, come and see me after the panel, and we'll make it happen. If you do have a Twitter account, if you mention @ChangeTip and use the hashtag DragonCon2015, you will get a link, ChangeTip bot will tweet back at you, and you'll be able to go redeem that and withdraw it, and that'll be maybe some of your first Bitcoins.
ChangeTip,
ChangeTip, and mention hashtag DragonCon 2015.
Is that
Bitcoin? It could be, yeah.
I'm not going near there.
Okay, yes.
So 10 Bitcoins makes one BitCon, is that right?
I like it. Yeah. I'm sorry, I like it. People have no sense of humor. Where are the costumes, by the way?
Kind of reflecting on what we were earlier saying about governments and currencies, the one thing right now about the dollar is I've traveled a lot, and they take the dollar. You go to Zimbabwe, and their ATMs spit out dollars. Literally. They have no currency.
It's actually how they're produced.
Yeah, I mean, you can.
And I always check when I'm in Zimbabwe, you know, that metallic strip better be there.
Oh, yeah,
because,
yeah. If you get through all the mud, but
yeah,
anyway.
Yeah. What's counterfeit between friends?
But the what I'm saying is, but the one problem I see with Bitcoin is that everybody in here knows about computers. They get a grasp mostly when you're talking about a wallet, but it sounds like 98% of the planet has access to none of that. So if you have Bitcoins, that's great in certain situations, but you can't, I mean, you just can't use them a lot of the time. And that being said, like, let's say in the future more people do have access to using Bitcoin, how is that going to affect the value? Let's say 1 million people right now use Bitcoin. What happens when 2 billion use Bitcoin?
Well, just to clarify, you know that one of the largest countries in the world has outlawed Bitcoin because they basically saw their currency disappearing, and that's China.
Sure.
China basically has outlawed it. That does not mean that if you walked into China with Bitcoins or you wanted to do a transaction in China that you couldn't do it. But I'm saying to you, I understand your statement in regards to third world countries that don't have computing power.
Right.
Right? You walk down, you know, same thing. You take your Bitcoin, you change it to dollars before you go to the country. Just
sure.
Like if you went to an ATM, you go to the airport and you go to an ATM and you exchange, you know,
right.
If you're with euros to dollars.
Yeah. So then, and that being said, are you suggesting that Bitcoin is just an alternate but not a future replacement?
So something that I think is really interesting about Bitcoin is that I think, based on the experience I've had in the industry and some of the banks that have been interested in Bitcoin. Sorry, I said banks.
You did say banks.
Ultimately, the way that I see Bitcoin integrating itself into society in the future will be, you won't even see it. It'll be what the banks will be working together, and they'll be using Bitcoin underneath their system. So you won't even have to know what a Bitcoin is. You won't have to know why it's important, but you'll be using it irregardless. And so I think that in the future will be, that'll be what it'll be like. It'll be just completely transparent.
And I actually agree with that.
Can we throw the orange box back here? I think we got time for one more, maybe. Right back there.
He's all the way back there. Scott, you heard about the dark net, right? How everybody wanted to have a lecture on that one. Of course, I don't want it taped or anything like that, but go ahead.
So you said earlier about... You said earlier about it being divisible down to 8 digits?
8 decimal places. 10.
8 decimal places,
yeah.
Yes. With coin loss, how are we going to handle that when, you know, there's...
Coin loss. Can you clarify what you mean by coin loss?
I start a wallet, I get a coin... Oh. I lose the wallet. I'm an idiot. I don't back up. Who knows?
They're gone forever.
Right. They're gone forever. What happens when there's so little left that we don't have enough decimal places to be feasible?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think that...
I'm talking like, 100 years.
Oh.
Or however long it takes.
Yes.
I don't know how many Bitcoins there actually are.
I think that the way that the protocol is defined now leaves leaves room for that to be things. You'd have to lose an insane amount of coins for that to really have a negative effect.
Does the protocol allow for more decimal points to be added later?
I don't believe it does currently.
It's a discussion.
It is a discussion, though.
It has been brought up. I think also what's been brought up is that if a Bitcoin hasn't been circulated by within 2 to 3 years, that basically they're going to recycle it.
Who's going to recycle it?
Supposedly it's the exchange.
If it's sitting on a third party.
If it's sitting with a third party exchange, they'll recycle it. They won't keep it, they'll just recycle it, but that's a whole different issue.
So you print it out of a box, put it in the same deposit, that would happen, so if you left it for your heirs, that kind of thing would still occur?
No, the concept that we were talking about earlier with the paper wallet, that's not with a third party. I mean, you've got the key on a piece of paper, and perhaps it's encrypted, should be encrypted with a password, and that's yours. It's like having cash in your hand.
Right. That's not a third party held.
All right. Okay. Are we?
Yeah, I think we're done.
Wrap it up. We're done. Thank you.